The presenting sponsor of today's podcast is Fifth Element CBD. Fifth Element is ultra-high milligram CBD focused on relief and recovery after a workout. They are specially designed for people with an active lifestyle, from weekend warriors to professional athletes to bucket list gym enthusiasts. Fifth Element, aka 5E, is full-spectrum high-milligram hemp to help you whenever, wherever you need it, whether it's after the gym or after work. Get yours today to feel better tomorrow by visiting 5ehemp.com and use the promo code MONSTER for 50% off. Yes, you heard that right. 50% off. Half off. That's 5ehemp.com and use the code MONSTER. Go to 5ehemp and get 50% off. That's the number 5, the letter E, hemp.com.
Welcome back to another episode on your Over the Monster podcast feed. I guess I just realized I don't know what we're calling this, but that's what I'm going to go with. We are here with you for some off-season chatter. We're trying to come to you once a week, doing what we can this winter. And today you got me hosting Matt Collins. I think it's the first time I've done it in like a month, so in case you haven't heard in a while. It is me, Matt Collins. This is the voice you are hearing. And I am with Bob and Jake. How we doing, guys?
Doing pretty good, Matt. Happy to be on with a three-man crew. I feel like it's been a while since we've had a three-man booth here, so it's a dangerous team right here.
Yeah, we got a little bit of all three shows combined here, huh?
Oh, yeah.
A crossover episode, as our friend Mr. Peanut Butter would say in BoJack Horseman. A few people will get that reference.
Right.
But yeah. Yeah, just some off-season stuff. The Red Sox haven't really had a whole lot going on so far this off-season. That is the case for most teams, but there has been a little action around the league. And, I mean, we're going to start with the big news from this week, at least Red Sox-wise, probably baseball-wise, too. That's Eduardo Rodriguez. Eduardo Rodriguez was obviously a free agent this winter. Red Sox gave him a qualifying offer. He declined that offer Sunday night and then turned around Monday morning, signed a 5-year deal with the Tigers worth $77 million. He has an opt-out after year two, so he can hit the open market again in a couple years if he starts to pitch up to his potential a little bit more. That deal is obviously very interesting because, as we were talking about a little bit before the show, Eduardo Rodriguez just in general is a very interesting pitcher coming off a year where the results were awful, the peripherals were pretty good, and got a pretty substantial contract. I mean, $577 isn't huge, but it's nothing to sneeze at. So, I mean, I guess we should just start with that contract, how we feel about it. We can start with you, Bob. Just in a vacuum, $577 with an opt-out for Rodriguez, is that a good deal for him?
Yeah, I think that he did well. I thought he might get a little bit more per year for fewer years, and he went the opposite route in 5 guaranteed years and can opt out after 2, which gives him a little bit of flexibility if he is great in those 2 seasons. Gives him that security. And in his late 20s, and I'm sure after missing an entire season and with a looming lockout, there's puts a lot of things in perspective for him. And he went out there and kind of set the market and got that guaranteed money. So I don't blame him at all for taking a secure contract. I don't know if you were going to follow up kind of on what we would have done or what the Red Sox should have done long term. I think Jake and I talked about that a little bit 2 or 3 weeks ago. We weren't particularly interested in retaining him long term, but I'm happy for him. Always rooted for Rodriguez, but I, from a Red Sox perspective, am happy that they did not give him that contract.
What about you, Jake?
Yeah, I agree. I'm happy the Red Sox didn't go there. That's not something that I was super excited about doing. Committing 4 or 5 years to a guy that has been that enigmatic over the years. It's a tough decision to make, and I think that all of us, you know, having watched so many of his starts, most of his starts over the course of his career, it's we're close to the situation, so we're a little bit emotional. about it and not always looking at it logically. And I think that I definitely fell into that with Erod, but I actually was surprised a little bit that he didn't get paid even more than that. I thought the market for him was going to end up more around like $80 or $90 million. So, Detroit did well by striking early, I think. And I've said this on Twitter a bunch, but it wouldn't surprise me either way if he either outproduces this contract or way underproduces it. I don't think like we're going to look back on the Erod contract in Detroit and be like, wow, that was a very fair deal. You know, it's going to go one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, I think I tend to agree, at least with that last point. I think this is fair. I think it's more likely that he outperforms it than he underperforms it, especially in terms of AAV. I think I'm with you guys. I wouldn't have wanted to go 5 years for Rodriguez. I think I probably would have gone 3 years at a higher AAV, and maybe the Red Sox offered that. I mean, we don't know. We know the Red Sox made a multi-year offer. Don't know what it was. Rodriguez might have just wanted the extra years and a little more guaranteed money total, which is his prerogative, and clearly I can't really argue. But, I mean, this is – he got a little more than what MLB Trade Rumors expected. MLB Trade Rumors have him at 570, so he got $7 million extra plus an opt-out, which is nice. But I kind of think that if he does – go out there and shove the next couple of years, that doesn't necessarily mean the Red Sox made a mistake. I don't know that he would have necessarily shoved for the Red Sox, because we've seen him for many years not shoving for the Red Sox. And even this past year, he was, I don't think he was as good as his FIP. He had a 3.32 FIP. He had the biggest gap between his ERA and FIP in baseball. I think the answer was somewhere in the middle, but I do think that he was hurt by the Red Sox defense. Just like pretty much every pitcher on the Red Sox was. So just leaving the Red Sox defense should help him, and maybe leaving Boston in general will help him. I thought I always was kind of annoyed by the Rodriguez being mentally weak narrative. I don't necessarily think that that's true, but I also think that different players jive differently with different cities, and Boston can be kind of a microscope, and Alex Cora specifically was very hard on him, which I think was good for him, but also maybe just getting away from that environment can make him thrive. So I think the Red Sox were probably in the right, ultimately, to go in the other direction, but I also don't think that that means it's a bad deal for Detroit. Sometimes I think things are good for everybody, and I feel like this is one of those times.
Yeah, I think that's well said.
Thanks. Yeah, I agree, and I think what you said about the somewhere in between, right? You can't just say that a pitcher is a full run or a run and a half away from their ERA and treat that as fact, right? There's some balance between analytics and real life, and that's where Rodriguez was this year. And it's a good point about Cora, who was hard on him the first time around. I think that helped him out in the playoffs. You know, I think back to when he was slamming his glove on the ground 3 years ago when Puig hit the home run in the World Series. Came back this year and had a bad start at the beginning of the playoffs, and then came back and had a couple of really good ones. They wouldn't have been in the spot that they were in the playoffs without him. And even the last game of the season, coming in and throwing a huge inning and getting the win in game 162. So he made a lot of contributions, but a lot of ups and downs for sure.
Bob, I thought we were on board with using FIP-based WAR estimators to determine players' values now. Isn't that what the MLB Players Union is being proposed by MLB?
I think that was, to be fair, not that I ever want to take MLB's side, but I don't think they were actually going to use Fangraphs WAR. I think they were just using it as an example, and they were going to come up with their own metric. But yeah, either way.
And you would trust them to do that, right?
Yes. Oh, especially, I mean, Rob Manfred, come on. He's not going to do anything nefarious. Let's go.
Fangraphs pitcher WAR just makes my blood boil. I hate that.
Yeah, I was trying to have any shred of optimism here, and then saw that opening, and now I'm more convinced that we're going to February. But anyways.
Yeah, I don't even want to think about that labor stuff right now, but that proposal was clearly just a joke, and they knew it was going to be rejected out of hand. But yeah, I mean, I think everybody, back to Rodriguez, I mean, I think everybody pretty much wishes him well. He obviously was here for a long time. They got him for Andrew Miller for like 2 or 3 months of Andrew Miller. I mean, that trade was just obviously a resounding success, no matter how you feel about Rodriguez. Helped them win a World Series, has been a part of their rotation for 6 years. So, wish the best for Rodriguez. I said it before we started recording. He is maybe the favorite player, my favorite player to write about that the Red Sox have had since I started writing. So I will miss him on that front as well. But best of luck to him in Detroit. But as far as the Red Sox go, obviously now the rotation, it was already a big part of this offseason picture. It's an even bigger part now. I think that's where I want to focus a little bit, where the Red Sox go on the rotation. And internally, one of the big questions that they have to figure out as an organization this winter is what they're planning to do with Garrett Whitlock and Tanner Houck, especially just for the 2022 season. Jake, we can start with you. What roles do you see them, those two guys, ideally filling? Are they part of the rotation picture or part of the bullpen picture?
I think, ideally speaking, the way that I would like it to shake out is Tanner Houck being in the role that he was in towards the end of the season as sort of that lockdown, multi-inning bullpen weapon that you can deploy whenever you want to, especially against tough righties. I think that that is such a weapon, and few teams have that, and the teams that do, it's just a real luxury. But Whitlock, to me, has everything in his repertoire already that, you know, looks like he has the makings of a really good starter. He's got three really good pitches that seem to be continually improving. He seems to have the mentality to be able to turn over the lineup multiple times. And I think as he gets further away from that Tommy John surgery, that, you know, that's something I'd be interested in, is seeing what he can do as a starter. And I also think that I wouldn't rule out, especially because, you know, he's still building back from the surgery, maybe piggybacking those two and maybe treating them as one starter every once in a while. I think you want the flexibility to deploy Houck in any situation, but, you know, having him there when Whitlock is starting isn't a bad thing either.
Yeah, I don't really love the idea of pairing two people to one game, but I get where you're going with that, just at least sometimes having that option. That does make sense to me. What about you, Bob? How are you thinking about these two?
Yeah, pretty similarly. I think you've got three definite rotation pieces. I wouldn't want to put Whitlock and Houck both in the rotation. I think that that's a lot of risk to go into the season with. So I'm hoping they sign one starting pitcher and leave that fifth spot open, preferably for Whitlock is where I would go. Obviously, you're going to probably have a sixth starter that you throw a couple million at, or some minor league deals, that type of thing. But with Whitlock, I think, as Jake said, you know, they protected him this year. First of all, they didn't know what they had, you know, even in their wildest dreams in the preseason, the season that Whitlock was going to have. So it's not like they kept him in the bullpen after he had been starting his whole career because of an injury. I think that they just didn't know how good he was going to be, how great he was with runners on base, pressure situations. He's closing in the playoffs. So obviously they, as time went on, they were willing to, you know, have less rest in between outings and give him more high leverage situations. His savant page, you know, the with barrels in the top 5%, you know, solid walk rate, good strikeouts, and just comfortable pitching out of the windup, three pitches, and came up as a starting pitcher. And I think all but two or three of his starts prior to Tommy John were all in the rotation in the minor leagues. So I feel like it's a transition that he can handle. And I, you know, unless they go out and make one huge splash that I have in mind as a starting pitcher that is probably unlikely, I think Whitlock could fit into that number three or number four role and might allow them to spend a little bit more elsewhere, perhaps in the lineup.
Yeah, I think I would view them both as starting pitchers. I mean, you guys covered the Whitlock thing pretty thoroughly. I don't really have anything to add. He's just really fucking good, and he has everything you want from a starter. I don't think there's too much debate there. I think the only question would be, was he so good in the bullpen, and the Red Sox depth in the bullpen is so bad that maybe you want to keep him there, but I wouldn't rob Peter to play pay Paul in that sense. I think with Tanner Houck, I saw a lot of good development from his splitter over the last few weeks of the season that I wasn't expecting to see. I have long been on the team that Tanner Houck is going to be a reliever, that splitter's never going to be good enough. I'm no longer firmly in that camp, and I think I would go into next season willing to let him start, let Whitlock start, but that doesn't mean I would have them in my opening day rotation. I think I would have them in whatever order you want to put them, 6 and 7. And you bring in two more starters in addition to the three they already have. And then they were ridiculously lucky, or maybe it was something they did. I don't know. But the health for their rotation this season was just insane, and it's not going to happen again next year. So I think if you start the season with those guys in the bullpen but have them stretched out in camp and keep them stretched out throughout the year, give them some spot starts and stuff to keep them stretched out in case you need them, I think that's the way I would go. But I would still like to see two major league caliber starting pitchers brought in, but I would also have those guys stretched out and ready to start for the season if you need it. And then that way, I mean, Heim Bloom has talked about wanting seven starters going into the season that they're comfortable with. That gives you seven right there. I'm comfortable with both of them starting, so that's the way I'd go. I know Bob said one starter. What about you, Jake? How many starters do you think that they would need to add this winter?
I'm with you on the plan of adding two. You know, I think you add one guy who's more of a sure thing, and then another guy with a little bit of upside who might come inexpensively. Some names to consider for that would be like a Johnny Cueto or a Drew Smyly or somebody like that who I think maybe isn't expecting to get a whole lot of money but has started as recently as last year. That type of guy would be interesting to me. But yeah, I mean, I'm not ruling out Houck making that jump too. I just think right now he's just so enticing in the bullpen. But I think two is the ideal number of starters to add.
Yeah, and I mean, the other part of this is just their bullpen is so bad too. And it makes it so tempting to just want to keep those guys in the bullpen because the bullpen just looks so ugly. But yeah, I mean, I think you have to focus on the start of the rotation and then go from there. So Rodriguez obviously signed, as we talked about. Andrew Heaney was the first free agent to sign, also a starting pitcher, signed a one-year deal with the Dodgers. Noah Syndergaard signed with the Angels earlier on Tuesday. He signed a one-year, I think that was a $21 million deal, kind of out of nowhere. But I was kind of surprised by this. Let me start with you, Bob. Were you surprised by how quickly some of these starting pitchers are signing, given, I mean, I was kind of expecting a freeze even before the CBA expired just because of all the uncertainty. Are you surprised that there's been, it hasn't been a ton of activity, but a couple of big names have already come off the board?
I'm not, because I think that some of the one-year deals, especially Andrew Heaney kind of coming off a pretty terrible season across the board for him, If there's guaranteed money in front of him before a lockout, he might be part of a bigger group of pitchers that a couple of those might lose out at the end on the other side of a lockout. Heaney probably saw that contract there, took the money guaranteed that he had that one-year deal at, was it about $7 or $8 million, I think. And I know that he had, you know, a good K-minus walk last year, but other than that, he had a rough go. Gave up a lot of home runs and you know, just some pretty rough stats, and was not welcomed by the New York fans too well. So I think that, you know, a few people that might take one-year deals might jump at that. Syndergaard, on the other hand, surprised me. That was a lot to give for 1 year and also give up a second-round pick and $500,000, and really aggressive move by the Angels. And I continue to think that after they drafted 20 pitchers and 20 rounds in the draft and then go out and sign Syndergaard, that somebody just slammed a door and said, you know, we're only signing pitchers until we make the playoffs, and wasting Trout and Otani's prime. Because they just have kind of made some almost irrational moves, and to only sign Syndergaard for 1 year and give up a second-round pick because of the qualifying offer was just really aggressive. So that one surprised me, but I also don't blame him for taking that in 1 year just to get that guaranteed money, especially with the uncertainty of his injury and then the uncertainty for Heaney coming off a bad year.
Yeah, Syndergaard going to the Angels just seems like cruel. Like something horrible is going to happen with that signing. Just, but I guess Syndergaard, there was a report, I think Morosi said it. He was like worried that he's going to fail his physical, and so he wanted to sign the deal early, so in case he failed his physical today, he could still accept the qualifying offer tomorrow, because I guess he hasn't technically officially declined it, which seems insane, and I would not feel great about that as an Angels fan. And I think Heaney's logic was that the Dodgers had like said that there was some sort of tweak that they wanted him to make, mechanical tweak, so he wanted to sign early so he could work on that. I mean, all that stuff kind of seems like eyewash to me, but Jake, are you worried that the Red Sox, the Red Sox and Chaim Bloom just kind of seem to be slow workers? Are you worried that they might fall behind on the starting pitching market?
No, not really. And I'm not, because I think there are enough external reasons to worry about the signability of some of these guys. And I don't know if you want to go through some of those reasons, but I've got a list here in front of me of about 17 guys, and I have like some pretty damn good reasons why a lot of them would not even want to entertain signing with the Red Sox, in my opinion. So I'm not sure that the Red Sox speed of attacking this thing is going to have a whole lot to do with it. I think their options are going to be a little bit limited as it is.
Is that their defense?
Well, part of it is their defense, but some of it is just like, why would these guys want to leave these situations? Oh, you know, like, you know, the white whale that we all want is Max Scherzer, right? But like, Scherzer was very vocal about wanting to be on the West Coast and finally settled in with the Dodgers. It's not like the Red Sox can present a better situation for Max Scherzer than the Dodgers are. So it's... You know, things like that. How are you going to convince Kevin Gausman, who has revitalized his career, to come back to the AL East where he got pummeled? You know, it's just, it's stuff like that that I look at when I look at the list of players that are available this year on the starting pitching side, and I'm starting to think that their options might be a little bit thinner than I think.
That's fair. Although, I think the answer to the Gossman one is just give him a shitload of money. But yeah. Whether or not you want to give him as much money as it may take is a different conversation, I think. A valid one. But, you started talking about some specific names. We might as well start talking about the guys who are available this winter, especially free agents, and some guys who might be good fits. And we got a listener question about Marcus Stroman, so he seems like a good place to start. Bob, we can go to you. Stan Raffi wants to know just thoughts on the Red Sox potentially signing Marcus Stroman.
I think if they are going to... So now that Rodriguez signed, they get a second-round pick. So they have essentially three second-round picks getting the Fabian pick back, right?
Yeah.
I don't think that they're going to give two qualifying offers. And I think that if they give one... Or sign players that were given qualifying offers in order to lose a pick. I don't think they're going to lose two of those. And I would use that pick on a middle infielder. So I'm personally the pitchers that were given qualifying offers like Stroman.
Stroman wasn't Gausman. Given one.
Oh, okay.
No, he wasn't. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
He was on a qualifying offer last year. He accepted it. So.
All right. I'm way off. I apologize. <That's okay. laughs> I thought he was on that list.
I had to look it up because I was like, wait, did he?
All right. Thank you for correcting me there. I thought he was on that list. So, yeah, then I would not rule him out. The only pitcher that I, as I've lined everything up kind of salary-wise and, trying to fit it into a puzzle that I would give what Stroman would get would be Scherzer. I would throw $35 million a year at Scherzer because it's not my money. But I think that they have an ace and they have a number two, and I just don't think that there is a need for a pitcher in the Stroman, Gausman range unless you're getting an absolute stud, which I think that Scherzer still is at his age.
I mean, they just bought the John Henry and company just bought the Penguins, so I think they get the money.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
They got what do you mean, Jake, on Stroman?
No, he's a hard no for me. You know, part of that has to do with the 50.8% ground ball rate in the existing left side of the infield. And this is coming from a guy who likes Alex Cobb, but I think that Alex Cobb and his ground ball rate are going to command significant less dollars. So if you're going to take the risk on a ground ball pitcher, I'd rather it be a much less expensive one. I think that kind of brings me to my question for you guys. I mean, would you target only guys who are technically fly ball pitchers this year, or guys that are more fly ball heavy, guys like Scherzer and Rondon and Smiley? Or would you kind of shop for some of those ground ball specialists like Stroman, Cobb, Greinke, Matz? I mean, reportedly they're looking at Matz, so you know, I'm just curious where you guys would go with that.
Stroman's a hard no for me too, and it pains me to say it because I love Marcus Stroman, the pitcher. I love the dude, but no, I mean, he's, like you said, he's going to command too much money for me to be taking a chance on a ground ball pitcher with Xander Bogaerts and Rafael Devers on the left side. So that's just too much. As far as the other guys, like Matz, like all these things, it depends on the contract. I have no sense of what Steven Matz is going to sign for. MLB Trade Rumors has 3 years, 27. I don't think I would do that. But if that price comes down and he's like the second starter they sign, I could be down with that. I mean, that's kind of how I feel about like Cobb and the other guys. But as far as my top target, he can't be a ground ball guy. Just not with the way the Red Sox are built right now. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, completely agree with that.
That's kind of the range I would more shop personally. The Desclafani, Alex Wood, Steven Matz. None of those having qualifying offers, but someone that might be more in a $10 million range. And then hopefully, add an infielder that can improve that defense. But it's going to be tough.
Go ahead, Matt.
I was just going to say, I think the only way that you can really like significantly improve the infield defense, like I would like them to sign an infielder too, but I don't think it's going to change the defense unless you move Devers and or Bogaerts, and I just don't see that happening this offseason. So I kind of think you just got to assume the infield defense is going to be bad next season no matter what happens.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I don't want to see either of those guys moved. So
No, I think it's a really difficult situation that they're in because if you talk about moving players to other positions, it kicks somebody else out of a position. You move someone to first, you got Cassius waiting in a year. So I just don't know how you fix it, because I agree. I don't want to see either of those guys go anywhere. I think what Semien in certain metrics ranked in the top 10%. So that is just an infielder that I've got my eyes on for multiple reasons, but it at least doesn't make the defense any worse than it already is.
I mean, in prison.
So that's who I want to give the money to from a hitting perspective. And then, you know, as you said, if you add a fly ball pitcher to go with that, that might be a good combination.
Yeah, and so along those lines, I mean, we talked about Scherzer a little bit. I tend to agree with Jake that he's probably not coming to the Red Sox. In terms of last year's production, the next best pitcher was Carlos Rodon, and I'm like weirdly into Carlos Rodon largely because he didn't get a qualifying offer, and I think you get him for like 1 year. It's extremely risky, but I think I'm confident enough in Eovaldi and Sale at the top of the rotation that I'm willing to just swing for the fences with my number three. And it could backfire horribly, and we could listen back to this next July, and it would just be the stupidest thing that anybody's ever heard. But I'm just like super in on Carlos Rodon for the, like the last, I'll be honest, it's been like 3 hours since I've been thinking about this, but I've been thinking about it a lot in the last 3 hours. Jake, where are you on Rodon?
Well, the comment I was about to make is how Rodon is the most interesting player available. So I am with you, Matt. I love the fact that he has just a 37.7% ground ball rate from last year, 45% fly ball rate. So he's exactly the type of pitcher that you would want to target with a really shitty left side of the infield. It's a little bit tough because of his injury history and all that. But I mean, he was amazing last year. He's a lefty though, so that's another thing that, you know, doesn't always work super well in Fenway Park. But I think that he's a good enough pitcher that it could work. I mean, he struck out a million guys last year.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. He struck out 35% of his batters, so it doesn't matter what hand he's throwing with at that point.
No, he had the most unexpected 5 WAR season or whatever, you know, that I've seen in some time. 2.37 ERA from a guy who, you know, if you told me he was going to be out of baseball after 2020, I would have believed you. Velocity ticked up 2 miles an hour from where it was the previous year. Just everything went right. So I completely agree. I think that he has as high a ceiling as anybody not named Scherzer on that list. And I agree with you that I think you can get him for a short commitment deal and maybe even have one of those awesome deals that the Red Sox like so much where they have a player option for the guy. He makes the most sense for me if you're looking to make a splash, because it's going to be tough to get Max from the West Coast.
Is the thought that he's going to, or you think he's going to take like a 1 year show me deal, kind of like what Marcus Semien did a year ago, prove that he's healthy and then go into next offseason and try to get a bigger contract?
Yeah, I think that's what most people are expecting. I mean, MLB Trade Rumors has their prediction for him is 1 year, $25 million.
Sure.
Which is just a fascinating contract and so on, just on its own. But yeah.
Yeah, I just did so many arm injuries and then it popped back up in the final month of the season this year. And I get it. These numbers are mind-blowing. You know, 188 expected batting average against and 35% K rate, and everything is backed up. Like, you know, there's very few holes that you could poke into the on-the-field numbers, but then it just kind of happened again late in the season to them, and I don't think that they knew what they were getting in the playoffs. And yeah, I don't know. There's just too many arm injuries there. I know he's 28. He could be spectacular. It's a swing for the fences move, but I'm spending that money on hitting personally.
I mean, it's totally fair. I guess I would be more comfortable with it for two reasons. One, and this is just, I don't really know how much I actually believe this, but part of me thinks that something clicked with them last year with their winter prep programs for the pitchers or something. I mean, I just cannot get over how healthy they were last year in a year where every team was suffering injuries left and right, especially to the pitchers. And the Red Sox somehow figured out a way to keep guys healthy. It's probably not something that they should bank on continuing, but I don't know. Maybe that makes me a little more comfortable. And also, I think their starting pitching depth should be very, very good to withstand some injuries. I mean, we talked about Whitlock and Houck, and then you get Connor Siebold, and you got Cutter Crawford, and you got Brian Matta hopefully coming back at some point. Josh Winkowski, Brian Bayo later in the year. I mean, they have some higher upside guys that they haven't had in the past, so I think that makes you more able to take the kind of risk on somebody like Rodon. But I mean, you're right. He could throw one pitch in spring training and be done for the year. I mean, it's extremely risky.
Not to go back to the qualifying offer, but that's got to tell you something with him and Kershaw, at least what their own teams felt about them.
It's Kershaw, they said, and again, I mean, you can never really take this stuff at face value, but they did say that was sort of like a favor to him. I don't really see baseball teams operating that way, but it does surprise me. I mean, if I could get Kershaw for 1 year and 18.4, I would absolutely sign me up for that. I don't think there's any chance he leaves the Dodgers, so I'm not even considering him a free agent.
Yeah, there's just so many of these guys that, you know, it's like, they're available, but are they really available? Like, you know, you're looking at Zach Greinke. You know, he's another guy on the market. Like, is he moving anywhere? You know, is Discofani and Kevin Gausman going to leave San Francisco after the years they just put up there? So there are a lot of questions for the top guys, and that's why I ultimately think that the Red Sox are probably going to not sign the Scherzer, the Rondon, the Gausman, the Kershaw, the Stroman. None of those guys. I think they're going to be in that Matz, Cobb, Cueto, Pineda, that tier of guy, which is not exciting. But
yeah, you're probably right. It's not great. I don't really love the top tier of this free agent class, though. I mean, I like Scherzer. I like Rodon, obviously. But I agree with you. I don't think Scherzer's coming. I don't think Kershaw's coming. I like him. Gausman, I don't really want. I still don't really buy. I think I'm still just, like, thinking of his Oriole years, and I just cannot bring myself to want him on a big contract. Robbie Ray, I don't know. I need to see him to do it 2 years in a row, I guess. I just am flabbergasted by how he just suddenly started to throw strikes, and I'm very afraid. If the Red Sox signed him, I would be very afraid that his control issues would pop back up. So, and then Stroman, like we were talking about with the defense. So the top tier of this free agent class is kind of rough in an area where the Red Sox could really use some better options.
I mean, we didn't even mention JV and Robbie Ray are two of the guys, Justin Verlander, I should say.
About Verlander.
And Robbie Ray are two of the guys that got qualifying offers. So the Red Sox really want to give up, I think, what would be the 57th overall pick for one of those two guys?
Yeah, I don't think I would. I mean, like I said, with Ray, I'm just worried about the walks, and then Verlander. If Verlander, I can't have an opinion on. I just feel like it's impossible for anybody to have an opinion on, unless you saw him throw the other day. Like, I just have no idea who Justin Verlander is right now, and I feel like it's kind of a cop-out, but if the Red Sox signed him, I guess I would just be like, okay, they must be confident, so I guess I am too. Like, it's just one of those things where I just defer to the people who have seen him pitch.
He's got that Tom Brady, I'm going to play till I'm 45 mentality, and the last time he was on the field, except for, I think, one appearance the year before, he struck out 300 guys and won a Cy Young. So I don't know. If I'm throwing a dart on a high upside pitcher, I might go Verlander over Rodon personally, since it's not just a career full of injuries, and it's if he's one Tommy John surgery and he looks good again, I'd rather go that route, but there's that qualifying offer aspect.
I guess it depends on, like, does it make sense, though, at this juncture for the Red Sox to start trading away potential high round draft picks, essentially. That's what you're doing here by signing an old guy like that. I mean, are we at that point where you start to make those concessions because it makes sense, or are we buying that the Red Sox are really, you know, the top of the class of the American League, that they should be making moves like that?
I'm doing that for a second baseman, not a pitcher. In a vacuum, I think so.
Okay.
I don't know that I would do it for Verlander specifically, but I think, like, if we're talking trades, like, if I, obviously it's not analogous, but I mean, if there's, I don't know, I'm trying to think if there's, like, a Verlander comp on the trade market, but I mean, if there's somebody that you could trade that's, like, older but very good like that, like, if Scherzer was available in trade, I would say, yeah, go trade, like, top prospects for that. So I think that's a similar thing. I mean, it's the draft pick I don't want to just give up for nothing, but also it's not, like, it's not a huge draft pick. It's not, like, the, when you're picking in, like, the high 50s, your, the expected war is, like, 1.4 or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not, like, that big of a chip.
That's very true.
It's just Verlander specifically kind of scares me.
Well, also, he's never pitched in MLB when they've been cracking down on the sticky stuff, too. So, like, what's he going to look like without the spider tack?
He was one of the very first conspiracy guys I remember, because when he went to... He looked like he was dead in the water before he went to Houston. Then.
That's what I'm saying, man.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, those sketchy Good Astros. Point. anybody else that stands out to you? John Gray's just the guy. Like, John Gray is just the most boring pitcher in baseball to me. I feel like they're gonna get John Gray because
hate that.
Yeah, I'm like so not excited about John Gray at all, but he's just kind of there. He feels like the guy that they're gonna get.
He's got the reverse splits, right? Better outside of Coors, but no one really knows who he is.
Yeah,
I mean, how could you? It's
or better, his... better at Coors, right? Excuse me.
Yeah.
What about Alex Wood? He's a weird name. He's somebody who I can't seem to figure out whether he's good or not. But he's a name that's been floated around a little bit.
I like Alex Wood. Injuries. It's another injury guy. But when he's healthy, I think he's mostly been pretty good. He had a couple of bad years, 19 to 20, but he also barely pitched. I mean, when he's able to pitch, he's generally been good. So I wouldn't mind that. I wouldn't want him to be the best starting pitcher they had, but I would not mind him as a second pitcher.
I think that everybody that went to San Francisco this year, something got figured out. I mean, Alex Wood was six limited innings, right? But in the sixes and the fives the couple of years before that, had some injuries. And between he and Desclafani and Gausman, they just found something. And I feel like, you know, anyone that goes out to San Francisco next year that is a lesser free agent or whatever direction they end up going, look out for those guys, because they maximized the potential for everybody that they brought in 109 games out of nowhere. So Wood was in that group. But, you know, I'm not against what that's the tier that I'm looking at, a Wood or a Matz. I feel like they might bring in.
Is it that heavy Bay Area air? I don't understand. Like, what the hell is going on out there?
I know. We're more prepared than everyone else. I know that much.
I think it's the recreational drug use in San Francisco. I think that has to be the answer. Yeah. All right, before we move on to Rule 5 stuff, any other starting pitchers that we haven't talked about that deserve some mention here?
Just selfishly, Matt, I really want the Red Sox to add Johnny Cueto, because he's always been one of my favorite guys to watch. And he is a fly ball pitcher, so I would love to see him as the second of the starting pitchers.
Yeah, bring some Louis Tion energy back to Fenway.
That's it, man.
I could get behind that. He's another San Francisco guy, too. I do kind of like Kikuchi, too. I mean, these are all guys, like, there's so many pitchers in this market that I'm like, yeah, I like them, as long as they're not the best pitcher they bring in. That's sort of how I feel about this whole free agent class. Yeah, and I feel like they're just going to bring in a bunch of those guys. But
I think Kikuchi opted out of a $14 million deal, and if that's what the going rate is, then I'm out, unless he's
going back to Japan.
I don't know. Unless he's going back to Japan and
maybe
wants to bail on this, but I'm all set with that.
Yeah, that was strange. All right, let's move on to the Rule 5 draft. Teams have until Friday to protect eligible prospects from the Rule 5 draft. They have to add them to the 40-man roster in order to protect them. Really, the second straight year, Red Sox have a lot of potential additions. And so, I mean, I think any conversation like this has to start with just how many they might be able to add. And I mean, right now the Red Sox 40 man by my count is at 33. Simple math, obviously they can add 7 without making a corresponding move in the short term, but then they're going to be free agents, so eventually they're going to have to use those spots for something else. How many, Bob, we can start with you. How many, if you have just a general sense of how many players you think they can get away with adding here?
So, yeah, I had that at 33 as well. I mean, are we talking how many they could drop from that 33? I think.
Or how many prospects do you think they could add? Roughly.
I think that if they drop 3 and add 5 or 6... and it's kind of just different names in and out that I'm looking at. You know, I think that they can go down to 29 or 30, add 6 prospects, and make 5 free agent signings and get to 40 that way. You're not going to add more than 5 names. Even if you add 5 names on this list, which I think there's 5 definites, that brings you to 38. So there's some names that I think that are going to be cleared off of the roster to go along with that. I don't know if you want to go into that part yet.
Well, Jake, we can go with you first and then get into some specifics.
Yeah, there are 7 guys I would add on this list, or protect, I guess. 7 guys I'd protect. And there are some guys on the roster that I would clear out in order to protect those guys. You know, and I don't know, can I name the names? The guys who I would add?
We'll get to that in a second. I want to focus on the 40-man right now. because I was doing, so I was writing a Rule 5 preview this afternoon. It'll be up Wednesday when you're listening to this. And my initial reaction was that they could probably be comfortable. This is before I looked at the list of eligible players and really started looking at it. I thought that it would be, my hypothesis was, oh, they could add 3 or 4 players. That should be good. And then I was like, yeah, absolutely. They need more spots than that. So it is. I mean, I do think they don't need to drop guys right now, but I do think guys are going to have to be dropped. And they don't have, like, last offseason, it was kind of easy to cut the bottom of the 40 man. It was, there were a lot of names to drop. I don't think there are as many this year. And I think the guys that look the most enticing to drop off the roster at some point are the guys they added last year. Hudson Potts and Jason Rosario specifically. Hey Bob, I know you were talking about some specific names. Were those kind of the guys that you were thinking about who are on the 40 man who could be cut?
Yeah, those were two. And then a couple of pitchers, because I think that they're adding the names that I have to add to the list are a ton of pitchers. And they already have 15 out of the 33 on the 40-man that are pitchers. So if they add 5 more of those and don't remove any pitchers, then you literally have more pitchers than hitters on your 40-man. So Phillips Valdez and Austin Davis were two additional names that came to mind. I mean, sure, they just traded for Davis, but they traded Michael Chavis, and we'd probably be talking about him as a 40-man crunch going into this year. But I mean, if you're going to add names like Winkowski and Bayo, and we can go into those names, but there's a few others that I would add that are pitchers that I like more than Valdez and Davis.
Yeah, I think I agree. Valdez, I definitely agree. Davis, I think, I don't know, Davis confuses me. I think he's too good to be DFA'd, but A, it's not by that wide of a margin, and B, they clearly don't think he's that good because they didn't really use him in important innings at all in the playoffs or in the last like month of the season. So I think I'm with you on those. And I think Tim LaCastro is another guy who I had forgotten was even on the team until this afternoon when I was writing this. But I think he's another guy that you can try and sneak through waivers at some point.
That was an insurance move probably.
Yeah, in case you like absolutely have to. But yeah, I mean, let's get into the prospects, who could be added. So I don't even know who the definites are and who the maybes are. Jeter Downs is definite, yes?
Yes.
Yep.
Winkowski is definite.
Yep.
Yes.
Bayo.
Yep.
Yep.
So those are the three that I thought was definitely definite. Bob, did you say three as well?
I think Gilberto's definitely definite.
Jimenez?
Yeah.
So I think so, but I guess the argument against it would be he hasn't played above A ball, and it's harder to carry a position player than a pitcher on an active roster all season. Ultimately, yeah. I do think he gets protected, but I had him a little bit, a tier below, but I guess functionally it doesn't really matter. Jake, was he on your... I think you said 7.
Yeah, he's definitely on my list. I just think it's easier with a guy who's a good defender. You know, he's just so athletic and raw. You could have him as a 4th outfielder if you were a bad team.
Yeah, I mean, the Orioles could have him as like a 5th outfielder, and it would be the Orioles could have him as like their leadoff hitter, and it would fit right in. But
hey, Cedric Mullins exists, man.
Are we sure he's going to be in the Orioles by next season?
No,
Jimenez would be like Akil Badu last year. You know, could come out of nowhere with speed and defense, and you know, maybe not quite as much power, but you know, in a team like that, like Badu got added to Detroit, probably not ready for the major leagues, and then ended up actually contributing.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, he just has too much upside to leave unprotected. I think there are two relievers that are very interesting that I was sort of half and half on. Durbin Feltman and Caleb Ort. Jake, were they both on your list of 7?
Feltman was, Ort was not. I view Ort as a little bit more of a fringy arm. I think Feltman has more late inning upside. Ort feels more like a mid reliever to me. So I didn't have them protecting Ort.
I came to the same ultimate conclusion as you. I had Feltman and not Ort. What about you, Bob?
Yep, same. Caleb Ort is 30 years old. He definitely had a good year in the minors, but I think you can sneak him through if you really wanted him. Feltman, I think has made great strides the last 2 years and, you know, was really pitched well the last 2 months once he got brought up to AAA. I think he's going to be pretty involved this year, at least for half the season.
Yeah, I agree. I think Feltman should definitely be in the picture, at least in the depth picture to start the year. And given how bad their bullpen looks right now, he could be on the opening day roster. I actually think that Ort has a decent chance of getting picked if he is left unprotected. I just think the Red Sox, it's just, you only have so much space. And so that's sort of the, that's the hard part of it. But I do think that he's a reliever. He's the easy guy to keep. And if it doesn't work out, like you said, he's 30. So if a team picks him and then spring training, he doesn't look like they thought he would, they can just get rid of him again. It's not that big a deal. So I wouldn't be terribly surprised to see him picked, but I do think that he will probably be left unprotected, although I'm not super confident in that. Cutter Crawford.
Crawford, he's a yes for me.
He's a yes for you. What about you, Bob?
Yeah, I have him as more likely than not. I didn't put him as a definite, but I think I would keep him over, you know, a Davis or something like that, or Valdez. So, I mean, if we're clearing a couple names out, I'm putting Crawford and one other name replacing them. Even though, like I said, there's a lot of pitchers, and I think that there's going to be some sort of, like, 40-man depth trade, whether it's a Seabold or, like, someone in that class that's closer to the major leagues, because I just think that they're very pitcher heavy if they add all of these names. So that's my only kind of caveat with that.
Yeah, Crawford, I struggled with Crawford. I ultimately left him off, but I don't feel good about it, and it was more just I was running out of space than anything. I mean, I do like Cutter Crawford, and I do think he would probably be picked. Maybe not probably, but maybe be picked. I don't know. He's just he's a hard case. I flipped these names on the agenda, but that was an accident. Thad Ward might be the most interesting name on this list coming off. He had Tommy John surgery earlier this year. I'm assuming he was on your list, Jake.
Yeah, he was my last guy protected. It's just the stuff is way too enticing, and he's far enough removed from Tommy John surgery that I think if you are a non-contending team, you're absolutely taking a flyer on him. So I think if he's not protected, he's automatically gone.
What about you, Bob?
Yeah, that's my seventh name, and I didn't have it as a definite, but I think more likely they keep him. Just 1.99 ERA in 2019 at high A, and then 2.33 at double A with strikeout rates over 11. You're risking a Garrett Whitlock situation coming off Tommy John if you leave him unprotected and someone brings him up and throws him in the bullpen for a year, and then he takes off from there. He's kind of just too high of a prospect pedigree prior to the surgery for me to leave out there.
He's not. I don't think he's going to pitch next year, though, which I think makes it even more likely he could get picked because you can just stash him on the injured list. But he had Tommy John in early June.
Okay.
So I think you could, like, stretch it out enough if you were to take him that you could keep him on the injured list all year and then have him, like, rehab a little bit at the end of the year but never really have to put him back on the 40-man. So I think he does get protected for that reason because he just doesn't seem like he would be that difficult to carry.
So you carry him until a certain date and then he can go on the 60-day IL, you can put him on the 60-day up an additional spot in March or something.
Yeah, I think that's, you would only have to carry him on the 40-man until, like, the start of spring training, if I'm remembering the rules correctly, which I think I am, but that's never a guarantee. So that's why I kind of shy away from the Whitlock comparison, just because I don't think he's going to pitch this year, but at the end of the day, I think he is protected. And I went back and forth between him and Crawford, and I think if you needed to only protect one, I would probably protect Ward, but that was tough. And if they can find a way to protect both, they probably should. The other name, I'm only going to do one more. This guy has been getting a lot of buzz. He's somebody that I've always kind of liked, and I'm surprised by how much buzz he's getting. But Cole caught him, a catcher. He's in the Arizona Fall League right now. He's always hit. There's always been defensive questions with him. I've seen his name bandied about in these conversations, so I figured we should bring him up. Did either of you have him on your list?
I didn't have him, but I really considered him. I almost said eight names, but at the end of the day, I just thought eight was going to be a little bit too much to add from this. But the reason to consider him is, you know, all the things you're saying. I mean, he's great offensively, and they don't have a ton of depth at catcher. So I think they have more depth than they did with the addition of Ronaldo Hernandez, who is another name that, you know, is on that 40-man roster. I think you can't have too much catching in your system.
I disagree. Well, I don't think you can have too much catching in your system. I think you can have too much catching on your 40-man.
I agree with that.
The big reason I don't think he's going to get protected, I just can't see them carrying five catchers on their 40-man. So I think if he is protected, I would expect to see either a non-tender to Plawecki or a trade with one of the minor league guys.
Yeah.
What about you, Bob?
You made all of my points. I was going to say I wouldn't rule it out, and he's been decent in the fall league and turned some heads there, but you'd have to move a catcher. I don't think you're going to have three of your 14 non-major league 40-man guys as catchers.
Yeah, that's just it's just tough to swing. And, I mean, it's a good problem to have, but, it's just tough to see it. And I always – every year I need to give a shout-out to Yoan Martinez because he's one of my favorite players in the system. He is not going to get protected. He's probably not going to get picked, but I am never going to stop believing in Yoan Martinez as an eventual major league reliever. And that is my soapbox for Yoan Martinez. All right, just one – listener question here before we get out of here from Brandon Youngblood. Has a potential trade. Would you shop Bobby Dalbec, Jaren Duran, plus prospects? Who knows what that means? To Oakland for Matt Olson and or an arm, maybe Sean Manaea. Bob, what do you think about potentially swinging a deal for Olson?
I don't think that first base is the spot that I'm really targeting. I think that they can get by this year, and I'm a Bobby Dalbec believer, at least as a platoon player for this season. I think made a lot of strides. I'm totally fine with going into the season with Dalbec as the first baseman, and depending on when Cassius comes up, if they platoon or how things go down the line, I think if you're going to move Dalbec, I would not do that for a first baseman with another great name coming up soon in Cassius. So this wouldn't be the deal that I would look for, plus you're dealing Duran as well. I would say no on that one.
What about you, Jake?
I think I ultimately fall on the side of no because Cassius is so close. However, I will say that I love the idea of getting one of these arms from the Oakland A's, but the arm that I would target would not be Manaea, it would be Chris Bassett.
That's right, baby. Chris Bassett Hive.
I love that guy. And I think Bobby Dalbec for Chris Bassett would actually be really interesting because I think it's still very likely that they trade Matt Olson to someone. So I'd be happy to give up Dalbec or even Duran for Chris Bassett type guy, I think.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it doesn't even have to be Bassett, but I was going to say, similarly, I think the idea of trading Dalbec and or Duran this offseason is something I would dismiss out of hand, but I'm a believer enough in Casas that I probably wouldn't do it for a first baseman. I mean, that's obviously nothing against Matt Olson, who was fantastic, but I'm assuming the Red Sox aren't going to be willing to build a literal all-star team this year, and you gotta kind of use your trade chips where they're most needed, and I just don't know that that's first base right now. But I could see especially Duran as a trade chip this year, but Dalbec too, so that does make sense.
So both of you like Bassett, would that be over Frankie Montas if you're gonna get an arm from Oakland?
For me it would, sure.
I think so. Montas, I think he would cost more, and he's had some injury issues, right? I don't know that I would want to give up a ton of prospects for somebody who's only thrown 100 innings once.
Bassett's just my type, man. He pounds the strike zone. He's, like, consistent. That's what I want. That's what I want in the middle of my rotation.
Yeah. I feel like Montas might be ready to break out, so I'd be on board with that.
It's a Red Sox signee, too, way back in the day. So
that's right.
Come full circle.
And the year that he didn't throw 100 before this year was steroids related, right?
Oh, that's right. That's what it was. It was an injury. He was suspended. Actually, that honestly makes me juice. Want him more.
We need some more juice in the clubhouse.
Hey, I'm not going to say no to that. All right, let's stop this before I endorse any more drugs. We hope you enjoyed today's show. If you did, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. I run the Over the Monster account at Over the Monster. Bob is at BobOsgood15, and Jake is at DevJake. And you can find all of our writing at OverTheMonster.com. And we're going to be back with you periodically throughout the offseason, so keep your eye out for us.